Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 80 on Monday, the 19th of December, 2016. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. You sound weary, Alan.
I am ready for this Christmas break that is about to be upon us, Andrew.
And we need to warn the listeners tonight, I think, or whenever they're listening. Alan happens to be in a very creaky room. I mean, really creaky.
I mean, look.
That was just him breathing.
That's almost me breathing. So I'm really sorry. I'm trying to sit as still as possible to save Andrew on the edit, but it's definitely going to creep in. So I'm sorry about that.
So he's at Haunted House.
Something like that, yes. I don't actually know if it is or not. It is an old
coaching inn tonight. It's not. Let's answer that one now.
Let's hope it isn't.
No, it's not.
No.
Right, let's get on with some. Well, we've got quite a bit to talk about, actually.
We do.
I was surprised the week before Christmas. But I'll start with some follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, last week we were talking about the EU versus various countries. As in, the EU was going to take these countries to court for either not having any provision to prosecute companies for breaking environmental law in their legislation, or for countries who do have that provision for not prosecuting Volkswagen for breaking environmental laws.
Yeah, well, that was basically the UK and Germany and five or six others, wasn't it?
Yes, that's correct. Because in last week we talked about how, well, why doesn't the EU take Volkswagen to court? Why isn't anyone taking Volkswagen to court if it's such a open and shut case, which seems to be the impression that's being given off by the EU and other people? And I was thinking about this, and I've been doing research, but I haven't been able to nail this down yet. But I think it's because the EU isn't in a position, or it doesn't have legislation or the power to take a company to court for breaking environmental law. I think that the what has happened at the EU is they say this is what should happen, and you as the local states, countries, mm-hmm. Need to implement this, and then you can take a company to court locally, as it were. This is locally in inverted commas.
All right, yeah.
Because I don't think anyone expected a company to break environmental laws across the continent.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think the EU is having a go at the countries, because it's always been nagging at me. If it's so obvious, if everybody's saying, oh, look, they've clearly broken the law, why isn't anyone taking them to court? If they're breaking an environmental law in this country, why hasn't an environmental group taken Volkswagen to court?
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing to say the government hasn't, and and the EU is now looking at that. But if Volkswagen are breaking environmental law, then somebody could probably start an action, should be able to start an action in a country's legal system.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think it is. It hasn't happened at a European level. But I am surprised it hasn't happened by, you know, if it is so obvious and if it is such a open shut case, why someone like Greenpeace or, you know, Friends of the Earth or someone like that hasn't done this in one of the countries.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with you. I can't see a flaw in your argument, I don't think. But you would think that if there was, you would think that if there was a case, then Greenpeace or one of the environmental groups would really be in there, like, you know, thumping at it, basically.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it would already be in the courts. And that's what makes it kind of strange. I understand completely what you're saying about breaking environmental laws across the whole country, because I guess the legislation that's been put in place is really about it assumes that it's a particular plant that's caused some kind of environmental issue, that it's maybe an oil spill or one of these, which are far more clear cut. yes. than what has...
And very localised as well.
And very localised than what has possibly happened with Volkswagen.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What's been implied, anyway, yep.
Yes, has been implied.
So that's what occurred to me this week, you know, it's finally after 17 months. No, 14, 15 months.
15 months, I think it is, yeah. I'll tell you where something has happened, though. And there has been an agreement, and that is that Volkswagen and lawyers for a consumer class action in Canada about the 2-litre TDI diesels have come to a settlement.
Mm.
It's all very complex, but essentially it includes...
Well, it's similar to what's happened in America with the 2-litre.
It is similar, yeah.
You know, it's we're talking 105,000, roughly 105,000 vehicles and owners.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the typical things like the buyback, trade-in, emission modification.
Yeah.
That is yet to be approved at a regulatory or regulatory body level.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's leasing a car can get out of their lease early.
Yeah, without fee as well.
Yeah, and that's looking to be the figure of approximately 2.1 billion Canadian dollars, which this only came out about an hour ago.
Yeah, this is very, very soon.
From us recording, so I don't actually know what that is in...
It's not hugely different from an American dollar.
Okay, so that's about
a bit
15
or something.
Billion, trillion, zillion pounds at the moment.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It'll be about 1¾.
In America at the moment, they've been granted an extension to VW have... to reach an agreement over the 3-litre diesels, because that should have happened last week, but still hasn't.
All right. Another one. And again, there'll be another class action. There are other class actions underway in Canada regarding those 3-litre V6 TDIs as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, talking of 2-litre though, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And America.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, from the People Are Just Horrible file, really. It was a report that's not quite what it says in the listing.
Well, no, what I would say is that did nobody learn from the BP lawsuit agreement file?
Mm, no.
That if there is a loophole, it will be exploited to the utmost.
Yes. Well, quite. And what's been happening in the US is that the is basically Volkswagen will buy back any vehicles at the full book value that are deemed to be operable. Now, in court, that has been defined as operable. It means that a vehicle so described can be driven under its own 2-litre TDI engine power. A vehicle is not offerable if it has operable if it has a branded title of assembled, dismantled, flood, junk, rebuilt, reconstructed, or salvaged as of September the 18th, 2015, and was acquired by any person or entity from a junkyard or salvaged after September the 18th, 2015. So basically what people have been doing is they have been stripping basically any bit that they can off it. Basically, people have talked about removing mirrors, jacks, headlights, floor mats, visors, radio seats, anything like that. Swapping out fluids, even if you're really just wrong. But yeah, I mean, people have been turning in cars which have already been involved in accidents. And all sorts of stuff like that. So people have really been pushing the boundaries of that. But there's a piece on Jalopnik all about that, including pictures of what people are trying to trade in. Missing grills and headlamps and bumpers and everything else, which can easily be sold on to other people to fix their non-TDI Golfs. It's a bit So there you go. You can do that. I suppose there's a thread over at TDI Club as well, according to Chalopnik, where you can join in the fun discussions. Nuts. Yes. One last piece of Dieselgate follow-up to round off the year.
And it's the facelifted A3 2-litre TDI, which there are reports, it says in this Autocar article, that it's using emission cheating technology. And this is the new A3.
It's...
There's two things here, isn't there? One, it is, and wow, just the level of stupidity is amazing. It beggars belief. Or two, it's not, and this is... This is a discrepancy or something that is within the current test regulations and permissions.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is a cheat, oh my god!
But so according to this Autocar article, the emissions are alleged to be manipulated on the A3 fitted with a 2-litre TDI engine after it was revealed that exhaust gas measurements varied according to temperature, which is evidence of the use of a so-called defeat device. Surely it's to do with the engine.
Yes,
it depends on exactly which temperature. One of the things that the
defeat devices are supposed to have been able to pick up is, between particular engine temperature ranges, it ran at different things because they were being run at a set temperature in a lab, and therefore they would run it a certain way at this temperature for a set amount of time, but then below 6 degrees or above 25 degrees, whatever that range was, then it was, it was running like it would without the device.
It's probably worth just to round this off to repeat Audi's statement on this, which is, we do not have any information on the tests, neither on the mentioned measurements nor on what engine was installed in the A3 TDI mentioned. Therefore, please respect that we cannot comment on the report. However, it should be noted that different measurements from other testing institutes prove that the A3 2-litre TDI is within the legal limits of EU6. I think the first part's completely fair. You can't expect them to comment on something where they don't know quite what was tested. The second part, where it's within the legal limits of EU6, well... Yeah, that's a little bit more Weasley words. It may well be within the legal limits of EU6, but what if you move slightly outside them? But we'll see how that one plays out. It could be fantastic moronity, but I really, really hope it isn't.
Yeah, I think if nothing else, it once more underlines how awful the EU6 test is.
Yeah. If there's one thing that we get out of it, that is absolutely it.
So, yes. Should we move on to new news?
Yes, new news about old cars. well, it's true. So, a Land Rover has managed to obtain an order from the High Court against Bombardier Recreational Products. So, Bombardier, you'll have recognised the name. In that they build all sorts of transportation devices. That sounds really fancy, but they build planes.
You've been doing consulting today, haven't you, Alan?
I haven't actually. I'm doing consulting tomorrow.
You're getting in the mindset already.
Yes. It's a special recreational product. It's a specialization of a transportation product. So they do build all that kind of stuff. They also build... do they build Argo Cats? They definitely build snowmobiles, all sorts of stuff like that. So Bombardier build all sorts of vehicles, Canadian company. But anyway, way off topic already. But essentially, Land Rover are blocking Bombardier for using the word Defender or other similar names, for example, Defender Max, here in the EU, because basically they want to keep and protect the model name.
They're saying it's their intellectual property, aren't they?
They are saying it's their intellectual, quite rightly saying it's their intellectual property. And they intend on remaining vigilant on this sort of matter across the 150 or so markets in which Jaguar Land Rover sell vehicles. As it stands, Bombardier have to pay a small amount in damages and legal costs, and more than that, they've got to remove the Defender badge from products and brochures. So they've got to rename whatever it is that they were going to name Defender.
Yep.
Which is fair enough, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
So from old tech to new tech.
Yes.
Smooth segues are us tonight.
Have we mentioned ZapMap on here? ZapMap even on here?
I'm not sure. You and I may have a while ago, because we've definitely talked about it. I know I have it on my phone and my iPad because I was doing some research. But yeah, it's pretty good.
For those who don't know, ZapMap is an app or a web service that shows you the location of charging points all around Britain, including telling you what type of charger it is and what type of vehicle can charge against that. Mm-hmm. I think you were saying to me before that you can actually put a vehicle type in and it will point out where all the charging points are, although it's not got all models at the moment.
No, you choose a vehicle and it'll show you. So if you choose a vehicle that's type 2, then it'll show you all the type 2. It'll filter the map, basically, and it won't show you CharDemo chargers. It'll just show you type 2 if you've got a Renault Zoe, for example.
Mm-hmm. So it's quite a cool map, and they get feedback from users, so it's a bit like Waze in that way.
Yeah, it's crowdsourced.
Yes, crowdsourced. Thank you for that's what I was struggling to come up with. They've upgraded it slightly, where it will now have dynamic network data across multiple UK networks, with partnering with ChargeMaster, so that you'll be able to see whether a charge point that you can use is actually being used or is available for use. So it's real-time information.
Yeah, and it's real-time information coming from the provider's data as well, which is what's really cool about that.
Mm. Which I think is a great thing. So all the EV owners will know where all the FEVs are, so they can go and stone them.
Yes. Well, it doesn't actually tell you that it's a FEV clogging up.
That's the next upgrade.
Send them rude text messages.
You pay a premium rate for that.
I'll stop giving people ideas.
But talking about charging points not being blocked but being used, I saw today that Elon Musk has acknowledged that some Tesla owners, this is more of a problem in the US, are charging their cars but then leaving them there longer when they're fully charged. So now there's been a new update that tells you that you will be charged for idle time.
Yeah.
So if you've paid before January next year, January the 1st next year, where you will no longer be guaranteed free use of the supercharger network.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on the free supercharger service and you stay after your car is fully charged, then you will be then charged by using it and blocking the bay.
Yeah, 40 cents a minute or something, isn't it?
Oh, well, that's going to get your attention.
Yeah.
Well, will it? Will it really? Because, what's the price of a Tesla at the moment? These people have money.
Well, yeah, but...
But still, it should, that should grab your attention.
It's pretty... it's steep enough that it should certainly grab your attention. Yeah, I think it's probably a good idea, actually. That sounds terrible, but I've heard that this is a bit of an issue.
Well, I think it'll help get people to not just do little top-ups. It'll make them think a bit and behave, really consider and deliberate in their actions.
But it's
more than they are being at the moment. At the minute, it sounds like people are going, oh, look, there's a supercharger. I'll just plug it in and walk off and do whatever it was I'm going to do and then come back later.
Yeah, spend 2 hours doing my shopping and then come back when it's charged in 25 minutes. So I can understand why that is.
So that's interesting that that's been done, I thought.
Yeah.
But I really like what ZapMap are doing here with the this charging point's free. Oh no, it's not.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a good and logical step forward.
Yes. Yeah. And if it's a polar one, so I was looking just here. I was listening to you, I promise, but I was also looking at that map on here and looking at, I was flicking around the ones in Basingstoke, and I did find some of these polar ones, because that's who it is that's joining up that ChargeMaster network. So I know that at the AA charge point in Basingstoke, the AA offices in Basingstoke, there is a polar charge point, which is free at the minute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Although I noticed...
I would presume that's going to tell you whether it's working as well.
Yes, it does, but that is crowdsourced. But yeah, I would imagine the polar stuff would tell you if it's working.
Mm-hmm.
Although around here, to be honest, it's a bit like around you. There is absolutely nothing for about 10 miles in any direction, 10, 15 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Down south of the M4, so you'd expect there's so many people around here.
I thought you can't move for them down there.
Because
that is the God's own land, isn't it? Obviously down there.
Oh, yeah.
Below Watford.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, you know what it's like. Below Watford services. Watford Gap services. I live north of Watford Gap services, so I'm quite happy. That's why I speak to people and I'm pleasant. Oh, that's...
Should we move on?
It's just a view those of us from further north have. Yes.
Yes, we have many views further north.
And flat caps and pigeons and all sorts of stuff, yeah.
It's grim up here. Right, should we move on to more futureness?
More futureness, yes. And
I'm thankful that this futureness isn't here, actually.
A little bit. So it's self-driving Ubers. So Uber have been running a self-driving taxi trial in Pittsburgh on the east coast of the US. Self-driving in that they still have an attendant to make sure that it's not going to do anything silly. But they are going to be coming to San Francisco.
They are in San Francisco.
Oh, they're already in San Francisco. Pardon me.
Oh, yes. This is developed very quickly, this story.
Sorry, because this is a December the 14th story, which is just at the weekend. And
just last week.
Yes. And it says, may soon find in the technologyreview.com story that I've got in front of me. Right, so they are actually already in.
They're XC90s. They've got a small number of XC90s now in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And Uber have decided they did not need to apply and get the Californian permit to drive for self-driving vehicle to drive in California. And this is a $150 permit.
Yeah.
This then escalated quite quickly to Californian regulators saying, DMV, stop now. Stop right now, or we are going to be really quite cross and there could well be legal things.
Mm-hmm.
In one of those generically written,
yes,
fill in the blanks. this could proceed, this could equal court proceedings or something equivalent.
Yes.
One of those. But Uber have ignored this and said, well, we have drivers in attendance, so it's not self-driving. So this has caused commentators to suggest that actually this is Uber playing silly so-and-sos to bring to the attention or bring it become a become precedent.
Uh-huh.
With this technology and say it's not self-driving, or if it is, then Tesla need to do the same, because that's what people have leapt on. They've said this is Uber's play to make sure that Tesla is regulated the same way with their driving assistance thing that I will not name.
I think that the statement from Anthony Lewandowski, Uber's vice president of advanced technologies, or getting rid of drivers, as it's also known, is quite interesting, actually, which is he says the regulations apply to, inverted commas, autonomous vehicles. And autonomous vehicles are defined as cars equipped with technology that can, and I quote, that's Anthony Lewandowski quotes, drive a vehicle without the active physical control or monitoring by a human operator. But the self-driving Ubers that we have in both San Francisco and Pittsburgh today are not capable of driving without active physical control or monitoring. So he's saying, well, they're not actually self-driving cars by your own definition, which, you know, I think it's important that these things get prodded and tested and checked, by which I mean the laws around it. You know, $150 is pocket change. It can come out as a petty cash for Uber. And is you know, it's
they'll probably spend more on that and coffee for a meeting, won't they? So,
well, to be honest, an hour of an executive's time considering the matter is probably more than $150. But I think that they are intentionally trying to make a point here, which, and yeah, I think that
they are prodding a stick at the bear, aren't they?
Here? Yeah,
they really are.
Yeah, they're very
good
at that.
But I don't understand how people have leapt to the conclusion that Tesla are the main real target for this, because Tesla have the permit.
Mm-hmm.
The correct permit that they need to do the testing that they do.
There could be an argument, of course, if you're doing testing and that everything is in beta for Tesla.
Well, it depends on who's doing the testing, isn't it?
Well, yes, so it does.
This is where we get back to the discussion about Tesla's use of language.
Well, yes.
Are they testing by us as a consumer doing the testing, or do they have specific test drivers testing?
Yes.
In the testing for testing?
I'm sure there's both, but if... To an extent, if Uber have to pay $150 per car for this, and all these people using Tesla system, which shall not be named on this podcast, are also doing testing for Tesla, do they need a $150 permit each? Because surely that's the case.
Well, yeah, that's right, and that boils back to a fundamental issue that we have about the consumer is not the person who should be doing beta testing, whether that is beta testing as in what is widely accepted as what beta is, on the public roads with a system.
Mm-hmm.
They should not be the test beds for it. It's one thing to take information and understand what happens, but hopefully they are not just throwing out elements of a system to see how that goes and then deciding whether or not how that's going to happen. If they are purely just doing an information gathering on the back of a system they believe is 100% safe or is, you know, safe enough to be on the road to be used by the consumer who is not a trained operative, who is not someone who sits there and is waiting poised as a professional driver to take over the wheel at the moment's notice, then that's you know, because if that's what they're expecting, then that's testing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes.
But I've sidetracked there slightly.
No, but it's an interesting point that comes out of this, and I get the impression that that's the point that actually Tesla's trying to make. Uber are trying to make. I'm sorry, yeah, I'm getting evil autonomous vehicle.
Yes, you are. You're getting which evil company who's going to ruin the future of the world.
Allegedly. Yeah.
Yes, quite. Well, it depends on which part of the internet you're in, doesn't it, really?
Well, this is true.
But I think it's a shame that it's public roads that these people are making points on.
It is, but I think that if it's not a public road, you can't make the point.
Yeah, there's little choice.
There's little choice in the matter, yes. Yes.
So you can look in the show notes. There'll be three different articles explaining the before, the during, and the how it is at the moment.
By the time
this comes out tomorrow morning, it can be completely changed where Uber executives are in jail or something. I don't know, because it is not, they're not messing about. This is moving quite quickly for an automotive news story.
Yes.
But
far too long for.
It's nearly Christmas, so in the spirit of goodwill to my fellow man, Toyota have announced. It pains me.
Get on with it. Pains. Come on, out with it.
Toyota have announced that there will be, on the back of a WRC car, a hot hatch. Now, before Alan is allowed to speak, I just want all the listeners to know that I have personally spoken to representatives of Toyota GB, and I have apologised now for how Alan is going to behave, because as we all know here, Alan likes a Yaris.
Can't be a Yaris.
Alan likes the idea of a hot Yaris. And I have apologised to Toyota for how Alan is going to behave between now and probably the time he dies over this. But I did say to them, whilst I am apologising on behalf of the Motoring Podcast, you have brought it on yourself.
They brought it on.
So Alan, are you a little bit happy that there is a Yaris that will come out that doesn't require you to
prat about with it,
enhance,
but hopefully
its capabilities.
Hopefully, because the last one, the 1.8 T Sport Mark II, was not a wonderfully awesome vehicle. But yes, I am really excited by this. Genuinely excited by this. There's a kind of little sort of marker rendering style sketch of a three-door Yaris with spoilers and big wheels and stuff, and I also have been assured that it is actually going to happen, because I said, well, I'm not going to get my hopes up, but that's really, really interesting to me. Really interesting.
It's interesting because it's not, you know, that's another manufacturer that's looking at hot hatches.
Yeah, and it's been a long time. I mean, don't forget that you know, not long ago I had a Honda Civic Type R, which, you know, is turbocharged and it's variable valve timing and all sorts of funky stuff in a front-wheel drive hatchback. And Toyota did that quite a long time ago with the T-Sport TTE, the supercharged one. So, you know, they used to have form at this stuff. We've all loved a Celica GT4, and it's been a long time since there's actually been a performance-oriented Toyota that wasn't a GT86. So this is really cool to some of us. I'll get back to my
box.
Well,
you're looking at it now. No, it's okay. I mean, it's nearly Christmas. You're allowed this brief time. I'll let you. But
you can cut it later.
So kind, so magnanimous of me, isn't it?
Yes.
But actually, this is interesting because we've got the Fiesta ST, which is the current best thing since sliced bread, and there's going to be a new Fiesta ST soon.
Yes.
On the back of the new Fiesta, which will be the new best thing since sliced bread when that comes out. Citroën have got their C3 rally car.
Yeah. So, and the DS3 performance is a similar size and stuff to what this will be.
Yeah, but I'm thinking more. Yeah, but that's more aimed at Mini and
maybe
the BMW 1 Series, isn't it? I'm thinking, you know, a proper Super Mini that we, you know, that normal consumers think about as a Super Mini rather than something else. But it's not a giant leap for Citroën to go from a rally car to having a hot hatch on the back of that.
Well, not when you've already got the powertrain and the DS3.
Are going into Hyundai are have obviously got a rally
i30
presence, and they've got the, you know, because they revealed some really very nice looking concepts that didn't really look like concepts.
Yes.
Like they were production ready.
There
was the i30, and and then I think there was the i20, wasn't there, in Paris?
I believe so, yeah.
So, you know, again, here's another small hot hatch, which is really cool. We love small hot hatches. I mean, of course, you've got Peugeot 208.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. I'm just thinking about that.
So, you know, we in this country loves a small hot hatch. I mean, we love a slightly bigger hot hatch as well. We love hot hatches here. So small hot hatches coming back is cool. This is excellent. So more people get involved. And as you say, it's, you know, Toyota have previous, and I think it's an interesting step for Toyota because they have, their current range is they've got the GT86 that are very well based, but it's, you know, it'll do your staples well, won't it? That's what it seems to be. I mean, there's the CHR, which looks quite
funky. Yeah, I like it,
and is getting some good reviews. So for them to come out with something a little bit sporty, a little bit fun, will be interesting to see if that gets reflected throughout the rest of the range of stuff that's predominantly fun.
Yes, I agree.
Because I think that's what's missing from Toyota at the moment. It's the fun.
Yes, yeah. And they used to have lots of it, and that's what hurts. And but it's nice to see Akio Toyoda has been, you know, he's been trying to return that fun to the Toyota range right the way from the GT86 to some of, you know, the whole new Supra thing that keeps appearing on the cover of Autocar, and hopefully we will actually see at some point before long.
Fingers crossed.
Totally.
Fingers crossed. Well, we have another story, but not totally leaving Toyota.
Yes. Toyota and Daihatsu. We spoke a few months ago about basically Toyota finalising a buyout of Daihatsu. Toyota had been a major stakeholder for quite a long time, out with European markets, and certainly domestically in Japan. You'd often get Daihatsu vehicles badged as Toyotas and Toyota vehicles badged as Daihatsu. So you buy the same thing in two different badges, basically. But now they're actually looking at creating a new budget brand between the two of them. Right at the moment,
well, they're not actually. They're not really creating a new brand, but they will be producing cars between them.
You're quite right.
For emerging market. It's going to be under Daihatsu's name.
Uh-huh.
But it's going to be aimed at the emerging market compact car.
Especially, sort of, my apologies, I got distracted by the fact that the new company which they're forming to do this is called the Emerging Market Compact Car Company.
Yes, but that's only going to be an internal name, isn't it?
That's a working name for it. My apologies. Yes.
Yes. Designed by people who can't make titles. Yeah. The Ron Seal
Leonard of Quirm approach to product
titles. Yes, quite.
But yeah, I mean, you can see how this would work. Stuff like the Daihatsu Terios. And things, which I think is really cool.
No, I do like Daihatsu cars, but not that. That was, no.
The Terios. Oh, the Terios was fantastically popular with retired gamekeepers.
Well, it's fantastically popular with one retired lady round us with the purple one.
All right. Oh, well, never mind. They were very popular around my parents. Lots of people had them for sort of climbing up to tend their sheep and stuff. Yeah.
But I'd have a Jimny.
Well, that's the alternative. That's it. Was that or the Jimny? Yeah, Jimny's cool too. Which also you
so
could buy.
So do you think,
a...
then, if it's going to be under Daihatsu's name, do you think this could lead to Daihatsu coming back to the UK as maybe competition to Dacia?
Possibly, but I think it's a little bit.
I mean, I know in this article it says, oh, no, we're not going to do that. No. But Dacia has done quite well. I mean, I know we were talking earlier before we started recording that their figures have tailed off a bit recently, but they've just brought out new, refreshed models.
Yeah, and it could have been breaking supply.
I think there really is a market for. Budget makes it sound wrong, but, you know, the. No frills,
high value
type cars. Yes, I like that. Well, ooh, that's good consultancy. That I like that. Oh, you can see you earn your keep sometimes.
Have my moments. it's. I'm just thinking. There's a garage relatively near me that still has the Daihatsu branding up from when it was a Daihatsu garage before, and it's now a sort of family run. Do they have a... I don't think they have any franchise now. I think it's just used cars. It's still a Daihatsu branding in place.
I look forward to Andrew Brady having something Daihatsu soon, then.
Yeah, I would like to think so. I think he is a prime Terios purchaser, to be honest.
No, I don't think he will. I don't think he'll go for that.
Grand...
Yeah, I might go
for that. Is it the Grand Move? Was it a slightly pudgy one? It's a bit dull, but I think it's a move plus. In his future at some point. But the last time I suggested that something was an Andrew style car, he then went off and started looking at them, and I started to get worried that it could be pinned on me as being my fault. But no, thankfully he didn't. Thankfully he went off on a tangent and decided he'd probably come home with a Mercedes or something instead. So. Anyway. Some of you might have noticed that we've begun putting out this show on YouTube. It is a bit of an experiment right now, and we're curious to see what the uptake's going to be. So it'd be really good if you could go along and you could visit our YouTube channel at youtube.com/motoringpodcast. Decide if that's a particular avenue you'd like to listen to Motoring Podcast on. Not sure that was very grammatic, but we'll get there eventually. If you think that's a great idea, then if you could subscribe to the channel and like any videos that catch your eye, then that would be just fab. It's worth saying that this particular episode, it may be a number of weeks before it actually makes it out. I'll have to do some catching up after Christmas. But of course, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to ask you to take a few moments to tell a friend about Motoring Podcast and review, and to leave a star rating and review for us via the podcast playing platform of your choice. The most powerful and popular are iTunes. So a 5-star rating on there is hugely influential. But other podcast apps such as Stitcher, Pocket Cast, Downcast, Overcast, and the like all make a difference as well. One last thing. If you've already reviewed Motoring Podcast and you enjoy Rear View, please can you also review Rear View? That just about made sense. they are two different podcasts whilst they're under our one brand, and so they have two separate streams, and basically the second stream needs help too. So if you've not reviewed either, of course, then I'm sure you'd love to leave a review and a 5-star rating for each of them. As I say, every week, a rating means a lot. So thank you very, very much. Andrew, now that I've said thank you, it's your turn to say goodbye.
Yes. It's not me saying goodbye, though.
No.
We mentioned a couple of shows back that Audi were leaving the WEC. Well, they finished their last race not so long ago, and Porsche have created a video to say goodbye. Not that I'm overly sentimental and soft, I merely had something in my eye when I watched this, but I thought it was an excellent 1 minute, 45 second film that reminded us of the fun, I think, that these teams and companies actually have over this. I mean, I know it's very, very serious and there's a lot of money goes into these things, but they display an element of fun and enjoyment.
And respect for each other.
Well, yes, it's very much a respectful. It is not poking fun at them, but it is showing a sense of fun. And that's missing sometimes in other forms of motorsport.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be a link in the show notes, and if you and I thoroughly recommend you going to watch it. It is a very good video, and like I say, there was something in my eye. That's all it was.
Okay, just a bit of passing grit, huh?
Yes, that's exactly it.
In other news regarding projects and stuff that we've talked about before, then. Ian Seabrook has been in his garage quite a bit recently, and it's just quickly to report that there is more and more progress going on regarding Ellie, the Project 2 CV. So there's lots of bits and pieces happening. I've got a funny feeling that as long as the weather's not too dismal over Christmas and New Year, then there's going to be quite a lot of progress on this. So
he wants it back on the road in January.
He does want it back.
Back on the road.
And there was some muttering about January the 8th, but everything's stopped scrolling at a reasonable pace on my laptop now. So it's all going. There's lots of painting going on.
Yes, it is. I saw a tweet not long before we started recording that showed that he'd got the lights wired in, although there was a slight little gremlin in one of the lights.
It's a Citroen.
Gloss over that.
Yeah.
It's gloss over that. Doesn't matter. The fact that they were lighting up at all is another step forward.
Mm-hmm.
I'm intrigued by the Plasticoat he's been using.
Is it Plasticoat or Plasticoat? It's Plasticoat, isn't it?
It's Plasticoat, it says, uh-huh. On the can.
Yeah.
Very intrigued by that.
Have you never...
No, I've never tried to do anything like that. And what he's showing for me, which is one of the things I really enjoy about this whole project, is he's doing stuff that I think... I look at it and I go, you know what, I could probably manage that. Because I feel such a klutz when it comes to anything mechanical.
With a 2CV, you could manage almost anything as long as you don't find it's wrong. I spent some time on Sunday trying to find pictures of mine and couldn't. So I've no idea where they've gone, which is a bit...
But if I had the space, it sort of gets me thinking maybe having a project car at some point.
They get dangerous, though, because you end up with collections of them.
Well, yeah, and I have to clear that with management and things like that.
Yeah.
Which might be...
You can turn it into a summer educational project.
Yes. I mean, maybe if I won via a £4 two raffle tickets.
God, you're going to be running around trying to enter every raffle you possibly can for cars. No,
no, I never said no. Not at the minute. I don't have space. I do not have space.
Neither do I.
No, but it's great to see that Project 2CV is moving forward, and Ian, when he's not smacking his head against things and having to lie down on couches to rest, that it is, you know, it's one of those things that it's you can see it's gathering momentum. Now it's back. Now he's able to crack on with it. Yes, it's getting very exciting.
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing Ellie on the road.
But we move now from good news
to pretty grim news.
Quite honestly, heartbreaking news, frankly.
Well, okay. Keep going.
No, it is, because I'm going to explain why I say that. A site we have mentioned many times, run by a chap who we have mentioned many times, and we are big fans of on this show, Petrolblog, and Gavin, big surname, as he calls himself, Braithwaite Smith, put out an article last Wednesday suggesting that it is the end of the road for Petrolblog.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, I will have a link to the article in the show notes, and the reasons he gives, I completely understand.
Yeah,
I really totally do. He now earns most of his income through writing about cars for other publications, where he gets paid to do that, obviously, because that's how you earn income, Andrew. Whereas he earns hardly anything, if anything at all, from Petrolblog.
Yeah.
And when you have to pay mortgages and you have people in a household who like things such as electricity and food, mm-hmm. sometimes you have to focus on where the money comes from.
Yes.
Which is very tedious, and it's incredibly grown up, and it's awful, and which is why I say I totally understand where Gavin is coming from. But Gavin has been so supportive of both Alan and I individually, and of the Motoring Podcast as a project and something that's done, that I'm sad that it's got to this situation for him. Actually, it's preyed on. It's clearly preyed on his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I can understand that, because, you know, Alan and I have had conversations about income,
mm-hmm.
for what we do, and we have said to you listeners before that, you know, there will be changes. We will be looking at ways that we can gain some income.
We are already looking, Andrew.
No, I know that, but this isn't about us. This is just to say that we do understand where Gavin is coming from.
Yeah, totally.
The great thing is that if he does decide, because he's not making a definite decision, but if he does decide that is the end of Petrolblog, Petrolblog will still exist, so we can go back and reminisce and enjoy the articles he's written.
And it's a fantastic archive about lots of different cars.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's written in such a British way, I think.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. And absolutely. And even if nothing else, if it's able to just keep it there, and maybe occasionally if he's updating his own stuff to write something, then that would just be awesome. But we'll see what happens.
But we won't lose Gavin completely, because he does write for other motoring entities. So we'll still get, I mean, because he writes for Motoring Research, which also works with MSN. Mm-hmm. He works with Diesel Car.
Retro Japanese as well. Two stories in one go. Because I've spoken to both about stuff for Retro Japanese as well in the past. So, yep.
So, I mean, it's more of a reflection on how difficult it is to pursue writing, producing content about cars that isn't, if you're a massive mainstream magazine,
mm-hmm.
or you are a clickbaity chase, you know, YouTube views by filming people driving around London in supercars, it is difficult, and there is no easy answer.
Yeah, yes, wouldn't that be an interesting episode of Rearview to discuss? Anyway, it was quite bad last week, because it was that, and also Richard Porter, on pretty much the same day, was saying similar
about
Sniff Petrol, and and just what all he was going to do.
Sorry. It was all the petrols.
It was all the petrols. That's what I said. It was just too much. Yeah, I was in. To be honest, for a chunk of last week, when it came to this particular topic, I was in denial. Yeah, and then that was Gav was suggesting that maybe they should team up and call it petrol. So it's worked for me. Anyway, should we move on to something slightly different?
List of the week time.
List of the week time. It's a very, very short list. Incredibly short list this week, I think.
But an interesting one, I think. I think it's interesting.
You think it's interesting. It's more interesting than one of the ones we had suggested for last week. It was pretty grim. It was really awful. I can't remember.
I've agreed not to talk about it anymore.
Locked it out from my mind. But no, this week it is Euro NCAP's best in class cars of 2016. So over the course of the year, Euro NCAP have tested 18 new passenger cars and 4 heavy quadricycles. I'm trying to work out what a heavy quadricycle looks like, and I've got my. I imagine something the size of an elephant, but I'm sure what it actually means.
There's a YouTube channel that does explain that, but I didn't look at it because I was too busy looking at their cars, the best in class.
Too busy watching the cars get smashed up. Yes, a heavy quadricycle is something like, it used to be a Revo G Wiz, for example. It was definitely a quadricycle, anyway. The three cars that were awarded best in class for 2016 were, for large family car, the Toyota Prius. For small... Yeah.
I'm surprised at the size.
Yes, me too, because the Hyundai Ioniq is another, and it comes in a small family car. And I wouldn't have said there was much more than 6 inches between the two of them, to be honest. But I've never seen them side by side.
Apparently, maybe 6 inches is enough.
Right. And small off-roader for 2016 is the VW Tiguan. So well done to them. There were another couple noted for excellent performance, and the Seat Ateca was one of those. But given it's on the same platform as the VW Tiguan, I guess I shouldn't be too surprised.
The only Mercedes-Benz E-Class as well.
Yeah, but it was the only executive class car tested, so they couldn't really say it was best in class when it was the only one that they had. So, that was it. That was a very short list, as promised. But the rest of that, there's lots of stuff as ever. The Euro NCAP website is really quite an interesting and slightly alarming place to waste some time on Tinternet, because they do have all the videos of all the vehicles, plus lots of other stuff and resources.
Yep. Ding.
Ding. Yes. Now, but I got away with it.
No.
But Andrew.
Those are for the pesky kids.
But Andrew, one final news story for the year.
Yes.
What is it?
Well, apparently, we, as in the public of the world, have obviously annoyed Porsche enough that they have released a video explaining how to pronounce Porsche, which will be in the show notes. And it tells us repeatedly how to pronounce Porsche. So you can go away and listen and see how I have just been pronouncing Porsche wrong all the way through that little segment.
It should be Porsche. Porsche.
Porsche.
Going to the slightly camp voice. Porsche.
Porsche. It's Porsche, though, for me.
I kind of go for the middle ground and sort of mutter the E at the end is my way around it, because I've never been quite sure either. So, anyway, it's nice to see them keeping us right.
Well, it has been a debate that has gone on for some time.
Yes. A definitive video works an absolute treat. As ever.
That's it for news for the year.
Is it for news for the year? Next week, is it?
Next week is our review of the year.
Yeah, next week is our review of the year. Sorry, excuse my confusion, people, but we've recorded the review of the year before the end of the year.
Yes, we've recorded an awful lot recently. because there is another show later this week.
Yes. There's a... so anyway, this is it for Monitoring Podcast for the new show for the year. We've got a review of the year and how we did with our prediction each last year, and a number of predictions, possibly fewer than were actually made, for next year, as well as a bit of a round off of what we've done and what the news stories have been and all that kind of stuff, which was great fun to record the other day. So so that's coming out next week. There's Rear View at the end of this week, Friday.
Yes, yeah,
Friday's
Rear Break.
And then it takes a break for a few weeks. And after Review of the Year, Motoring Podcast takes a break for 2 weeks. But there are reviews coming out in the meantime.
Yes, that's correct.
So there will be website-y side of review plus audio side of the review in many cases as well. I I've forgotten what's coming out when and what the next what can you remember what the next review is that's scheduled to come out? This is what happens
it's
when you you're
the
all
barbarian.
Is it the barbarian? Oh gee. It's yes, Mitsubishi L200 Barbarian is coming out next, so I had one of those for a week, and you can hear all about how I got on with it, and it's a shining example of
eye-catchingness.
Yes, that's pretty good. That's a pretty fair way of describing it. Anyway, should we round up?
Yes, good. I think we should.
So, I've just opened the wrong thing.
Well, I was going to say lots of thank yous, but no, that's wrong. Let's see, because this is we did the gushiness
last time. Though
you get gushiness next week, by the way.
There's gushiness. Everybody. There is one person we forgot to mention last week specifically, and that was Simon Searle, who earlier in the year did all our rebranding and our logos, and I forgot to mention him.
Oh wow, that's a big miss.
Yeah,
sorry,
that's
Simon.
A big miss. So thank you so much, Simon.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely brilliant.
I hopefully everyone agrees that. Even if the content's rubbish, the branding's gorgeous. So thank you for that, mate. I really, really appreciated that. And continue to. So, yeah. But aside from that, don't forget that between now and the next time, now in the start of January, you can give us any feedback and share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Please don't forget to leave a review or rating on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing, as well as liking and subscribing on YouTube. It all really does matter. Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way is Twitter. If you search for Crack Windscreen and you see a chap in a brown jumper woollarding on the back of a Subaru, that's me. So you know you've got the right account.
I still can't get used to that.
What? That my picture's there?
That your picture's changed.
No, there is a picture.
Yes, this is true. Yes.
As opposed to a scribble. But what happens if people would like to get in touch with you, Alan, personally, as opposed to the show?
Well, best way to get in touch with me is, once again, Twitter. It's at AJPBradley. I'd say we'll be back recording again at the start of January. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.